were three questions that were developed by Cody and members of the Environmental Collective, and then we're going to open up the questions to the audience. So first I'm going to introduce Wes and Mark, and then Mark will introduce Cody. Wes Gillingham is one of the founders of Catskill Mountain Keeper and has lived in Sullivan County on his family's farm, which has been in his family for 55 years. He has two children, and his wife Amy raise livestock and vegetables there, and in fact founded in 1997 a 150-person community-supported agriculture. Is that right? Before anyone even knew what community-supported agriculture was in this area. Prior to being at the Catskill Mountain Keeper, Wes has worked for the National Audubon Society, teaching in their Audubon Society Institute, Expedition Institute, traveling all over the country. It's a program that was through the university, right? He also spent 10 years working as a park ranger for the National Park Service at the Upper Delaware Scenic and Recreational River, and has been a wildlife technician for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, working with them for about 30 years. So Wes has a very long history of walking the walk in our area, and we're very grateful to have him here and to have him be one of the sponsors of the film. By the way, tonight's program, if Mara hadn't mentioned it, was co-sponsored by the Human Rights Program, the Environmental Urban Studies Program at BARD, the BARD Center for Environmental Policy, and Catskill Mountain Keeper, did we get on it?
Yeah, BARD.
And BARD Environmental Resources Department. Okay. So, Mark Ruffalo probably needs no introduction to many of you. Contrary to popular opinion, he isn't actually a terrorist on the Homeland Security's list. Although it is true that Homeland Security was monitoring the screenings of Gasland throughout the country, and in fact caused the resignation, right, of the original
Pennsylvania's Homeland Chief of Homeland Security had to resign.
Right. So Mark Ruffalo is an actor, obviously, producer, screenwriter, and political activist. He also lives in Sullivan County with his three children and his wife. And he became very involved in politics after 9/11 when he felt that there was not enough of a voice, especially in the actors' community, in opposition to the Iraq War. Since then, he's continued his acting career, but in the last couple of years, he's spent full time working toward this environmental activism and has been in numerous screenings of Gasland, and has a lot to say about social action and activism. I think that's pretty much it. So welcome to our guest.
Last but not least, I'd like to introduce the third member of the speakers, the third member of the panel, which is Cody Mallott, who spoke to you just before the screening. Cody is a second-year student at the BARD Center for Environmental Policy, and he's a lifelong resident of Western Pennsylvania, and he grew up in a small town of less than 2,000 people. He's a real personal connection to drilling in the Marcellus. His own family has leased land for drilling, and I think by last count, he said there are 12 wells within 3 miles of his home and 4 visible from his back porch. For 6 months, during this last year, he interned at the Pennsylvania State, with the Pennsylvania State Parks Department. And from that experience and his experiences in Western Pennsylvania, he is writing his thesis right now on some environmental impacts of drilling in Pennsylvania State Parks, and is researching some of the legal and policy options that we may be able to take to help with that. So thanks for joining us tonight, Cody. And the first question tonight, which Cody and the Environmental Collective developed, he's going to read, he's going to ask Mark and Wes before he joins us.
So the first question I would like to ask you two is a three-part question. First, what's the present state of New York's policies on drilling? Second, with regards to the moratorium, what, if anything, is being done during this time to strengthen regulations? And finally, what is the end goal for the state of New York in terms of its final stance on drilling operations and fracking?
I'll answer the second question first. And I'm a stickler for details. There is no moratorium in the state of New York on horizontal drilling and hydrofracking. Right now, what we have is the governor 2 years ago, Governor Patterson, asked for a supplemental to be done on the generic environmental impact statement. For those of you that this is semi-new, when you need to drill, when you go out to drill a well, you fill out an environmental assessment form and a well permit application. And that's all you need to do. And then you have to, you agree to go through these permit conditions, which are the generic environmental impact statement that the DEC did in 1988 and got accepted in 92. It's a couple of volume document, and it covers a lot of the aspects of drilling in the state. There's nothing in there about horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing, the combination of the two. And the combination of the new mixes of chemicals they're using created a situation that we needed to change. There was a handful of organizations that started this process 2 years ago by asking for that supplemental. We got it. We've gone through a scoping process and then a initial draft. The last draft we got left out cumulative impact, left out a whole series of things. But the only thing that creates a moratorium is that a company would have to do an individual environmental impact statement, which is another public process, and they are avoiding that at this point. The other thing to remember here is this only covers horizontal drilling and hydrofracking in low permeability shales. So they are drilling into the Marcellus in vertical wells. And they're actually, a company in Otsego County, actually it's a Canadian company, but they're operating in Otsego County. It would include vertical wells if they were using over 100,000 gallons in the fracking process. So what they did was they applied for a fracking permit and fracked 80 feet of the formation with 80,000 gallons, just under the 100,000 gallon limit. Then they went back and did another 80 feet. Then they went back and did another 80 feet. And then they went down and did 80 feet in the Utica. So they're using that loophole. So there is drilling going on in New York State. Not at the scale that we're all worried about, but there isn't actually a moratorium. And what we're waiting for now is the DEC to give us another draft. And a lot of people are on edge right now because the last time we got a draft, it was an 800-page document. We put in 300 pages of complaints about that document. We went from the original GIS that was done in 1988. It said, due to the nature of gas drilling, there are no cumulative impacts. Fast forward to last October, and we got a document that said, cumulative impact is too difficult to predict. So that needs to change. And I already forgot the other two questions.
Thank God, because I did too.
So the other ones were actually covered the first two. So the last one would be, what is your final end goal for the state of New York in terms of the final stance on drilling and fracking?
Ban.
The end goal, I would answer that question by saying this. I've never seen the number of organizations getting involved and the number of organizations communicating with each other. I'm on two separate phone calls, conference calls, every single week with people from Elmira and Ithaca and Rochester and New Paltz and New York City, Albany. People are different, and people have created their own different organizations. Everybody has their own specific strategy and agenda. Some people are calling for a ban. Some people are calling for really strict regulations, you know, maybe because they're just the regulatory wonk and that's what they want. But also, you know, some people are thinking extreme regulation might keep the industry out. some people are looking at regulations in terms of not just horizontal drilling and hydrocarbon, but the gas drilling industry itself. Some of the folks that you saw in the movie, in Dimmock, the first wells contaminated had nothing to do with hydrofracking other than that they were planning to do it. But it happened, it was an accident that happened during the drilling process. So a lot of the things that happen with gas drilling can happen even in conventional wells. So there's a great concern about the regulations specifically around that. But the thing that Mark said quite short, and I don't tend to answer questions short, the thing that he said, and a lot of people are thinking this from all those places I mentioned, is it's really starting to look like this can't be done safely.
A big problem, I mean, why I'm so quick to say ban is for a long time we've been waiting for science to catch up and tell us and lead us in the direction of where we should go with this. It was sort of, well, let's let the science decide. If this can be done safely, then you know, who can stand in the way of that? It's going to bring economic development to a depressed part of the state. And but as we've gone along and waded into it, we found that we're dealing with an industry that has a real problem with the truth. And the only way you know how they lie is because their mouths are moving. And so what's happened is when you start talking about regulations to an industry who's found every single way to get around every single regulation and then have lied when they've been busted on it or laughed or just disregarded the law altogether, then the idea of regulating that industry becomes more and more implausible. Why I say ban, that's not really my original position, but we're getting driven to a place now where there seems to be only one thing left. When you're dealing with an industry that refuses to tell the truth, they refuse to follow the rules when the rules aren't implemented, they refuse to actually clean up the mess once it's happened or take responsibility for that mess once it's happened, then all that's left to us as a people is to say, you know what? Not here. We're not going to allow this to come here. And that's what a lot of New Yorkers have been doing up to this point. And that's really the reason why they're not doing hydraulic fracturing in mass in New York State. And it's because a lot of people like you witnessing this and standing up and saying no. And that's really the only way anything gets done. And that's been my experience. The 3 years I've been working on this, and people said, it's impossible, you'll never stop it, it's coming, just find a place to run and hide, leave Sullivan County, you can afford it, go somewhere else. I've been getting my ass kicked for too long to lay down. I learned in the trenches as an actor that if someone says no to you, that means you gotta fight twice as hard. So
to get to a place where this would be a viable option.
obviously, this the energy issue is the beginning of this whole problem, and this country has a really long history of trashing energy-producing regions. I don't care whether you're talking about mountaintop removal in West Virginia or strip mining in Wyoming for coal, oil drilling, as we understand it, offshore now. And energy production is, you know, one of how we get our energy and how we use our energy is a major issue that we're going to really have to face as a culture and as a country and as a world, and we really need to change our pathway. So there's a whole, we could spend the whole evening and come up with five other movies to watch on that topic. But I have a little bit of hope with this issue, only because, you know, I've known that issue around energy, having been to mountaintop removal sites, seeing that on Black Mesa in Arizona. That was 20-something years ago, and I decided then that I'm never going to be hooked up to the grid and be part of that system. I've been living with solar panels on my house now for years. But I see this as an opportunity, because the average person in America expects to flick on their light switch and turn on their water faucet and be able to have six TVs in a house, whatever it is, and it's just something that comes from someplace else. And the hydrofracking issue, when I first called people out west because I needed help, I couldn't find anything on the internet 3 years ago about hydraulic fracturing in Marcellus Shale. The only thing I could find was industry information that said, this is the new supergiant, the new Texas. But I called people in Wyoming, and the first person I got on the phone was a woman who worked for the Powder River Basin Commission, has been fighting gas drilling for the last 30 years. She goes, yes! Finally, there's gas drilling in the east. And it was because they had been fighting this for years, and they couldn't get any momentum in Congress, because they didn't have enough constituents in central Wyoming. And what this issue has done, more people today, because of Gasland and Frack the movie and the hearings and the SGIS process and the horror stories coming out of the newspapers in Pennsylvania, more people know what happens when they flick on their light switch. And there's hope in that for me, that we will start taking a serious look at how our energy is produced and how much we use and how much we conserve.
You're not being paid to be there. And
that sends a strong signal to them, and that was very, those days were powerful, and we actually need people who are closer to the Capitol to help us. So I urge if you go to Catskill Citizens for Safe Energy, Catskill Mountain Keeper, even drillingisn'tsafe.com. There's plenty of action alerts, and there's plenty of events coming up. This April 11th one is going to be a great, fun event. There's a lot of hot girls there. And a lot of very cool, active type guys. Who are interesting. But seriously, you know, I have seen this. We changed this. We made a difference. And you guys will make a difference. And you can make a difference. I want to circle back a little bit to the energy thing. What we're seeing now is we're getting desperate for energy. And because we're desperate for energy, the ways that we're extracting energy are becoming more and more desperate. And less safe. And you guys are witnessing what will be a whole shift. We can't continue like we're going, obviously. I mean, we all sense this, you know. We all see that there's only so many Gulf spills that we can handle. There's only so many Fukushimas that the world can handle. There's a finite amount of water, fresh water, that we're losing through these kinds of extraction methods, through tar sands, through coal, mountaintop removal, through coal burning, through mercury contamination of our water. We're coming to an end here. And whether we like it or not, or we want to change or not, we have to. It's just, we're either going to go with some grace or we're going to go kicking and screaming, but we're going. And so, you guys are it. And I'm not that asshole from the next generation who's like, come on guys, young people got to make it happen, man. But I have a lot of hope for what you guys are able to do through social media. I do think, love them or like them or not, you guys did put Obama, the first black president in the history of one of the most racist countries in the world, into office. And that was you guys. And you haven't been properly slammed for it. You haven't been properly thanked for it. You guys are really powerful. And that's it, I guess.
I will say it's changing, but the gas filling issue in the first couple of years was a lot of the same aged activists, all like my age or even older, that were involved in the issue. It's only been in the last year or so that young people are starting to get on to this issue, and that's pretty exciting. And we need to get more of everybody involved in this, because this is our water. This is basically the biggest environmental threat that anybody in this room has seen before in the state of New York.
Oh, here's another.
This isn't my question, but I just want to second what Mark just started out saying about lobbying, and I'll make this short and sweet. 10 or 15 years ago, we have a little company here in New York State. We got impacted by some things that were going on in the government. In the first year, I decided to hire lobbyists to go handle it, and we didn't get anywhere. In the second year, I said, you know, I'm going to go do this myself. And I showed up in Albany, and I knocked on these people's doors, and they went, wait a minute, you're a real person? And your company is impacted by stuff that goes on here? And they took me from office to office to office to office where I told my story, and we changed New York State law, and I did it without paying anybody to do it. So if you guys want to make a point, I didn't know how to do it, so I tried to do it. So, and also, just look at the whole Arab world is changing because of Facebook. I mean, I don't do Facebook like you guys do. But my question is, as I've lived in the Hudson Valley for many years, and the DEC and the DEP and whatever other initials are always known to be really careful about protecting New York City's watershed. And now we have Andrew Cuomo in there who happens to live in New York City and come from New York City. I mean, I can't understand how these guys can all be sitting on their hands and not doing something about this. It's clearly going to poison, you know, this stuff that we all depend on.
And first of all, I mean, this isn't the DEC that most people think of, the forest ranger or the NCON officer who's ready to run and give you a ticket because you drove in the stream. This is the Division of Mineral Resources, and these guys are industry techs. Brad Fields, who's the head of the Minerals Division, was there when they wrote the original GEIS in 1988. Prior to coming to the DEC, he worked for Getty in California.
Our DEC, it's very much like what happened in the Gulf. It's what they would call a captive agency. You have the mineral management people who are actually in charge of selling permits and bringing gas drilling to the state in the same office with the people who are supposed to be regulating it and monitoring it. And so you have the same guy who's trying to pick the apple, but at the same time not pick the apple. And we see how that ended up in golf. It's exactly the same sort of setup. And so you have weak regulations. The state is strangled budgetarily so that there's only two or three regulators in the entire state who are going to be overseeing 50,000 wells. It's exactly what we're seeing happening in PA right now, where Corbett has neutered the Department of Environmental Protection from being able to regulate or hand down any sort of fines or regulatory smack on the hands to the gas industry unless Corbett okays it himself. It's money, man.
Yeah, and in addition to that, in Pennsylvania, they've also been using natural gas drilling as a way to supplement the state budget. Over the last 2 or 3 years, the state government's taken over $283 million from oil and gas lease money by leasing state lands in order to balance the budget. So for them, it's a way to fix problems, and they haven't really been looking at it as a problem yet. So.
Yeah. And ultimately, this is the governor's decision, and the governor is the one who's telling his commissioners, you know, how to react to an issue. And I must say, Andrew Cuomo is in office, but we have not seen, since the beginning of his race for the governorship, he says a lot of things like, we're not going to allow this unless it's safe. But what does that mean? And watersheds are sacrosanct, and we really need to see some action. He's been just saying things and not doing concrete things. Right now, today, he could fill out a piece of paper and make an executive order and ask the DEC to look at and to change the regulations in New York State as far as how the wastewater is handled. Right now in the state of New York, you have a situation where you have Class C hazardous chemicals that under EPA law for any other industry are considered hazardous waste and have to be dealt with as such. Coming to a well site, mixed with water and sand, put down into a well, mixed with heavy metals, radioactivity, and other conditions. contaminants from the formation and other formations down below brought back up, and it is no longer hazardous waste. It is only industrial waste. And actually, the statute in New York State doesn't even consider it industrial waste. To DEC's credit, they're dealing with it as industrial waste, but statutorily, it's only considered solid waste. That's ridiculous. And that should not be. The governor should just send that letter to the DEC, and we should at least change that before we even talk about the whole rest of the picture.
Question up here.
Thank you so much for everything you're doing. It seems like I've been talking to a number of folks who've been looking at how widespread the assault on our country has been from a legislative standpoint. And I was curious if we could just take a moment, everyone breathe really deep. Dream bigger, and what, if you could just for a moment imagine the sort of the antidote progressive legislation that would, as we see like some of the stuff in Michigan where a state of financial emergency can be declared and an appointed agent could come in and say, oh, all the contracts are null and void. If at a certain point, say a value of life or some means whereby there was a breaking point where profit and survival were not at odds and this whole industry somehow went belly up or inside out, or it wasn't the fox guarding the hen house, however we made that happen. If you could either transition to Ecotopia or for a moment or an example of progressive legislation. And anyone in the room who's not able to go up to Albany, of course they were staying up all night, April 5th is a teach-in. I believe we have Weiss Cinema from 2 to 3:30 here at Bard, and across the country colleges are trying to face this Tea Party and the whole corporatocracy assault, but from an academic standpoint, because if we're just sitting there talking to ourselves, then that's what we're doing. Anyway, cheers. So, progressive dream, and April 5th, TJ. Oh, the Beehive Club is also here on Tuesday.
When I found out about that, I wanted to go out and get
through two, so 1 minute.
I was wondering if, like Mark said, if ban drilling and the hydrofracking completely, would the damage that was done by the drilling and the fracking still be released gas and still be pollutant, and would the damage be permanent? Or would it be able to be repaired?
I mean, when it's in it, first of all, we don't have a lot of information. That's one of the problems. There's been no peer-reviewed study, so we don't know, and there's been no cumulative impact study, so we don't know what the long-term destruction is. We don't know if this water that's been pumped into the ground at these high levels with so many toxins in them are working their way back up into the aquifer, or how long it would take for that to happen. I mean, this is pretty nascent, but the common knowledge is, we haven't even really gotten into the radiation discussion. The New York Times just ran an article on all of these drilling firings are coming up with high levels of radiation as well. And water that's been exposed to radiation and carries that radiation with it, which is can't be remediated. And so a lot of these toxins, and you hear them talk, Al Appleton talking about it, there's no way to remediate it. There's really no way to take those chemicals out. So in effect, when you have, let's say, millions of gallons of fresh water being used for fracking, that's taken out of our drinking water pool. Now you have to remember, I think it's only 7% of the world, only 7% of the water in the world is actually fresh drinkable water at this point. And we're taking that out from ever being able to be used again. And so we don't know how long it would take to remediate this or how to remediate it really. And that's basically why we got our heckles in a bunch. You know? Can I just mix a metaphor? Not a poetic, so the justice.
Over here, you guys?
I actually have something on that real quick, too. Remediation and permanence is kind of relative. State parks in Pennsylvania, the majority of them were destroyed by gas and oil drilling in the late 1800s. And if you went there now, you would never really know. Now, is that because it's a natural environment, it's not an urban area? But to say something's permanent is really hard to do, especially with this kind of pollution, especially when you're not sure what the final outcome is. I mean, even Chernobyl is eventually going to be better.
And the part that's scary is you're not sure what the final outcome is going to be. When we hire a hydrogeologist to help do comments on the SGEIS, he started out his executive summary by saying the hydrofracking will create conditions for upward gradient of contaminants into aquifers. Now, the summary goes on to explain some of the ways that happens, one of which is old or historical wells within the region where drillings happen. When there was a stronger review of, that's when the EPA and some stakeholders come in and do a review of the state's regulations. They did that in 1994 for New York State, and they found 18,000 unplugged wells across the state of New York. So that means there's a strut across, most of those are in the western part of the state, in Cattaraugus and Allegheny County, but those are places where if you're hydrofracking anywhere near that, it's a potential where upgrading of contaminants will go. One of the other issues that he brought up is the fact you've taken now a completely impermeable formation, and you've now made it horizontally permeable. So you've got contaminants that weren't ever moving before that existed naturally in the formation, plus the addition of these chemicals that you just learned about in the movie, and then creating conditions where they can move vertically now, or horizontally, to find places where they can move up horizontally. I keep saying horizontal and vertical. part that he was talking about was he was saying this might happen in 50 years. So yes, everyone could come in here, everything might seem okay, they're gone, and then 50 years from now, you know, a region of our state won't have access to clean water. And that's the other major problem with the regulations, because they're writing a package of regulations that just cover the whole state. There's so many regional geologic differences as you go from the Catskills out to Buffalo that need to be addressed before you allow something like that.
You guys over here? So I just want to add something Mark said, just these quotes that have been staying with me from the Pachamama Foundation. That's doing some great work in terms of our energy use. 85% of everything Americans buy and use 6 months later is in a landfill. And if the whole world bought and used as much stuff as we did every year, there'd need to be 5.5 Earths to produce enough stuff. So just to put that out there. And I realize even as a pretty groovy living person, I live at the Common Fire Co-op and I live really green, but still, every time I look, I see stuff that I've been conditioned to use too much of, and I can check myself and improve. So, and here's my question, gentlemen. Could each of you briefly just say one or two things you urge each of us to do, and by when, and what you urge us to ask our friends and family to consider doing? And if you want to mention anything vis-a-vis deadlines, timetable in that, that'd be great, because there are, you know, thousands of actions potential with these couple hundred people. Thank you.
Well, I would just, I'll put a plug in for April 11th. I mean, my hope is that we get 1,000 people in the Capitol. A year ago, when we had a rally, there was like 500 or 600 people there in the Capitol. We moved inside because it was January and it was freezing rain and windy out. It had a huge impact in the Capitol. There's kind of an echo chamber that happens there. To see that many people show up concerned about something, and that really was the footing that enabled two bills, one in the Assembly, one in the Senate, to make its way through and get voted on for a moratorium. And, you know, the vote in the Senate, which is famous for voting with, you know, a bill getting passed by one vote on partisan lines, was 48-9. And that was because of a direct impact of people being involved. So, go to all, I think BARD has buses for programs that they should be using. Somebody in this room, get BARD on their toes to get buses to use and take some of you up there and then fill those buses up and then carpool. It's not that far to Albany. Josh Fox is going to be one of the speakers at the rally. Sandra Steingraber, the author of the book Living Downstream, she just wrote another book that's being released called Raising Elijah, Living in a Toxic World. A series of politicians, and the whole thing will get started. I get introduced by someone from the Onondaga Nation. So that's a really important day. And then I could throw a couple more things out, but I tend to talk too much. I'll let myself know.
You guys are all on Twitter and Facebook and everything, right? Not you. If you go to gaslandthemovie.com, it has a streaming sort of update on it. What I'd ask you to do is just go do that and see if that takes you anywhere. What I found is, as I educated myself on this issue, I actually came alive. The other thing that I learned in my journeys is if you're losing hope, then you're not doing enough. It's up to you, you know. And gaslandthemovie.com is a good entryway. It'll link you to all of us, the Catskill Citizens for Safe Energy, for Catskill Mountain Keeper, for Frack Action. There's a lot of groups. And you also will give you action alerts. You sign up for one of those. You know, just doing those stupid things of signing a petition tomorrow. To get Maurice Hinchy's, your guys, FRAC Act through Congress would be a huge thing. What the FRAC Act does is it says that these companies have got to disclose the chemicals that they're using. It's a bill that's trying to make its way through Congress right now. I would urge you all to go and find it and sign on to it. You can do it through Maurice Hinchy's webpage. You can do it through Gasland. There's a lot of groups that are all working towards the same thing. That's the other beautiful thing. It is what we get to enjoy in our time is leaderless movements that are changing the world, that are coming from social media. And then speak about it. Talk to people about what you learned here. And that alone has a huge impact. Just education alone has had a huge impact. So those are the few things that I would say right off the bat.
Great question from my friend Tom Kaplan over there. And Cody, what would you?
Kind of building off what Mark said, education and knowing the materials best, but make sure that you're looking at least understanding both sides of the argument. It's really hard to win an argument or even understand an argument without being researched on each side of the issue. And if you don't read what the gas companies are putting out, you're not going to have anything to say when somebody makes a point that they've already made. Whereas if you look it up and you're informed about it and you're ready, you'll be able to better answer that call when it comes.
That's a really good point. The other thing, I mean, this, you guys have an opportunity here to affect what happens in the future. And there's that old saying, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, and you hear about diversity of talents and all those things, and I've actually witnessed that, like I've never seen it before in my lifetime in the last 2 years, is seeing the different groups. You've got these insane computer wonks who are there, like, I'm getting emails from them, I read the thing that they're emailing me at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, they're staying up all night and doing this research. And then you've got people that aren't doing the research, but they're on the phone calling their senator or congressperson every day. There's something for anybody in this. And then if you're, you know, really passionate about natural history, I mean, this whole, the fragmentation of habitats is something to understand and speak out against. If you're somebody that lives in a city and is, you know, has any kind of understanding of air pollution, the impacts of that, and understanding that this stuff is downwind, you know, moves downwind and impacts people, have their fresh, clean air and the water issues. I mean, there's something for everybody in this. And this is a really powerful movement. I mean, 3 years ago, people were saying, you're crazy, there's no way you're gonna stop this. You're not even gonna get good regulations. The best you can do is maybe alter some of it. You might be able to get better casing regulations so there'll be less accidents. We're 3 years down the road, and they haven't started an expansion of this process in New York State. That's phenomenal. Phenomenal. Nobody thought that could happen. And the whole country is watching what happens in New York State because of that. And there's an opportunity for you to jump on that and just, let's do something that nobody thinks we can do. A couple of months ago, I got flown into New Brunswick with somebody from NRDC, and we put 830 miles on our car driving around New Brunswick because they wanted to talk to people from New York and how they did it in New York. Now New Brunswick is redoing their gas drilling regulations. It's exciting. It doesn't have to be depressing. People ask, there's hot girls and cool guys. And people ask me how I stay motivated. Well, it's because that's how I stay motivated, because I'm working on it. I'm not sitting at home going, oh, shit,
this sucks, man. We're doomed, man. It's over. It's all screwed. I'm sorry.
So, I think we have a lot more questions left in the audience, and I was wondering,
we're
Mark,
five more.
Five more? Okay, and then after. start with you in the front, and then you in the shirt, and then you in the baseball cap, okay? And you're welcome to leave at this point if you like. Okay. While you're all leaving, I want to again thank our guests.
$5.9 billion given to the oil and gas for, it's called oil and gas percentage depletion allowance. Gas companies get subsidies even if the wells don't yield any products. That's on the page, that document that's out there. If you can get one of these copies of the hit, talk about Marcellus Shale. $3.5 billion manufacturing tax deduction, $3.5 billion intangible drilling costs. That means we're paying for their casing. $522 million distributed for distribution line, $133 million passive loss. I like the titles here. And $10 million. The subsidies and the coddling that's happened with this industry is phenomenal. They should be paying for their impacts, and they're not. That's the problem. So this whole, the idea of this economic viability, they're reaping the benefit of our destruction. Some of the figures I've heard, it costs about $3 to $5 million to drill one of these big horizontal wells. They get about $12 million in profit. I want them to spend at least $5 or $6 million of that 12 on making sure that they don't pollute the neighbor's water.
You know, if we had to really pay for the energy that we're paying for, the true cost of it, then we would have a renewable competition that was actually a fair playing field. Right now, you're dealing with an industry that gets $30 billion a year in tax subsidies against an industry, this nascent industry, that's trying to create a new energy form for us. They get $3 billion a year. You have ExxonMobil made $600 billion. It's the greatest profit ever made in the history of business. And they're still enjoying these same subsidies. If you took those subsidies away, what is the true cost of our energy? If you back out what we pay for wars, if you back out what we pay for remediation, if you back out what we pay for people who get sick because of these things, if you back out all of those costs that we're incurring without us even really knowing about it, then I have a feeling that the way we use energy and the way that we get energy would change very, very quickly. It's not letting capitalism do what it's meant to do, which is to create a competitive environment where the best process wins. We have been handicapped. We've been handicapping the gas and oil industry for years. They own our politicians. But we're coming to a point now where we could change that. Even President Obama was talking about cutting subsidies to these people. That's what I see as the remedy. Let us really pay what energy is really costing us. These types of energy.
I just wanted to give two examples on why it's important to become involved in the political process. A couple of Red Hook, Town of Red Hook experiences. First is a couple decades ago, the utility Con Edison wanted to locate a nuclear power plant right here in our town. And local activists got together. In fact, the woman who spearheaded that is sitting several rows behind Blue Goja. And with a lot of dedication and hard work, we were able to fight and ensure that that didn't happen. Unfortunately, what did happen last year is elected a new freshman Republican congressman on the platform of bringing a nuclear facility to his congressional district that we reside in now. Astonishingly, even after Japan, he's still pushing for one. And given the possibility that may close, there may be a real push for something like that to happen in this congressional district. The other example I wanted to give was in lobbying, which many of us did for the last few years, on expanding what's called the Better Bottle Bill, recycling water bottles because they were not subject to the nickel redemption like these. was literally wiring funds into the campaign accounts of all these legislators. And NYPERG, the New York Public Interest Research Group, did a fascinating study that literally showed you hour by hour as the bill moved from committee to committee how the funds and how the number of funds expanded as it got closer to passage. So it's really important for those of you who care about your future to get involved in it, because one day you're going to wake up and you're going to have a freshman congressman who's going to want to put a nuclear power plant in your community.
Yeah.
First, I'd just like to build off of what Mark said about ExxonMobil, and that they also, aside from the profits they made, they also paid $0 in taxes last year, I believe, and that's been circulating in the media. So just to add on to, what they've been doing and what they've been allowed to get away with. But I have two short questions. First, should we be lobbying to get those subsidies that are given to the oil and gas companies, I guess, given to alternative energy companies like solar and wind and things like that to replace the oil and gas dependency? And secondly, have the toxins from hydrofracking been found in communities outside of where the hydrofracking has taken place, so like downstream or in the ocean or anything like that? I don't know if you have that information, but I'm just wondering if that's been tested or found.
Yeah, well, the most the last part there, the most famous example is what happened in the Mahogahela River. They had fracking water going to the public waste treatment facilities throughout the valley. Each one of those facilities was only getting a legal permitted amount. But what the state of Pennsylvania did not do is figure out if every single one of those facilities throughout the river valley was receiving that stuff, what the cumulative impact would be. And what you ended up was Pittsburgh Steel actually shut down for 3 days because the Mahogahela River got too saline and it was affecting their machinery. That the salinity comes up from down below that, and so that the Mahogahela River, which feeds drinking water to people that are not necessarily right near the gas fields, were being exposed to this. And right now in New York, there are some places, the Auburn facility, Watertown facility, are taking fracking waste, some of which is coming up from Pennsylvania. Right now in Carbondale, Pennsylvania, every Sunday morning there's truckloads after truckloads that load onto a train, and they're taking this wastewater to Ohio because Pennsylvania doesn't have any place to take it at this point. I'm not sure where it's going in Ohio. So yeah, communities are being affected way far away from where this stuff is happening. Plus, you saw in that movie the air contamination that can happen with a full build-out. So once the infrastructure is there and all those compressor stations and all the activity is going full bore, I'm sure the people that are just east of Bradford County, where there's a lot of activity, are experiencing some of that air pollution. Maybe you can speak to that.
Yeah, actually, the Monongahela, there was one in 2008 where total dissolved solids were off the charts from exactly that, and actually the river is still not completely back to the way that it was prior. And in addition, you had accidents like what happened in Clarion County with the natural gas well blowout. That released 30,000 gallons of chemicals, and anything like that. If you have a wastewater impoundment that fails, polluting streams, it's fairly easy for it to travel from community to community.
We're on our last question.
Yeah, I have one more question.
And then the rest of you can come up and talk to our guests if you want.
A question on the DGEIS, the two process questions. When will that be published again? And whom will it be published to? And who's the approval agency for that? Is it the executive, the legislative branch, or the DEC itself?
It's
so that the people here could be informed on how they could be involved in that commentary process. And just as a follow-up to that, if that does get approved in some form or denied, what implications does that have for the legislation that could or could not be passed for New York State?
What we're waiting for is another draft, which means, and the Executive Order 41 that Patterson put into effect before he left office, and Andrew Cuomo continued it, says that this should come out by June. Just the other day, there was a group of 42 organizations that sent a letter to Andrew Cuomo asking him not to ask for that deadline, that's a ludicrous deadline that the DEC should have all the time it needs to go through the comments from last year and complete a new set of permit conditions. So today, in an interview with AP, Commissioner Joe Martens said that they were bringing in other employees from other agencies to work on the SGIS so they can get it out quicker, and he's expecting them to work on it throughout the summer. So when exactly does that come out? I'm not sure. But what happens is there's a minimum of a 30-day comment period, so you and I would have an opportunity to read the document and then make comments. And those comments will have to be addressed by the DEC in their final draft, and then a final draft will come out, and then there's a 10-day period, and then they do a finding statement, which kind of summarizes the document, and then it will become the permit conditions at that point. This is getting a little into the weeds of the regulatory process, but at that time, the normal thing that happens is you do a rulemaking package that actually creates laws on the books to follow up on those quote-unquote permit conditions. And it's kind of complicated, but that's something we do not have for gas drilling regulations in the state of New York, and we are pushing for that along with many organizations. And there are some assemblymen and women and senators that really believe that should happen. There's people within the DEC that believe that should happen. And during that process, the Department of Health should also be brought in as a co-lead agency and hold hearings on the health impacts to incorporate. So if all of that were to happen, that would still be another couple of years before the process would finish, and then there would probably be lawsuits.
Is that all
governed
by the mineral agency?
The rulemaking package is more codified by the legislature. But the SGIS is just with that finding statement from the DEC.
So is there any final word before we break from Cody, Wes, Mark, who would like to leave us with?
Thank you.
So I've been debating this internally for a while. I think what I'm going to do is, in case anybody is more interested, especially in regards to Pennsylvania and the laws and regulations, I'm going to leave my email address, whether it be on the EC or BARD CEP Facebook wall, or I can just leave it here, and if anybody has any questions that they believe I would be able to address, to just leave them for me.
I would just say, I mean, in today's world, we get inundated by this stuff all the time. And don't forget to take a walk in the woods.
Thank you.